Welcome once again to The Business Side, our weekly spotlight on economic news in the Commonwealth. I'm Alan Lytle. The GOP pension reform bill is out. It's a massive 500-plus page proposal, and Chris Bollinger, the director of the Center for Business and Economic Research in the UK Gatton School of Business, has been poring over that document. Welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here, as always, Alan.
Well, rather than spending precious airtime rehashing how we got here, talk about what this plan hopes to accomplish and whether you think it will work.
So the plan hopes to accomplish getting us out of a hole. We are currently running a huge deficit in the pension system in that it has not been taking in enough money to supply the amount of benefits that have been promised to people in the pension system going forward. Will it work? I think it's not quite far enough. If you look at the estimates and the numbers that are coming out, even of the Bevin administration, we're still going to need something else in order to fill this in. But it does go a goodly part of the way, I think.
3% cut for teachers and state workers. Obviously, that is not going over well.
No, that's not going over well. We've certainly heard the reports and we've certainly seen the protests. I think one thing to keep in mind here is that and I think it's really great the way you led into it, Alan, that, you know, rather than rehash how we got here, because that's really not going to help us. We have a big problem and we need to solve it. And standing around and pointing fingers doesn't help. We got here because we didn't fund it. And what that means is somebody, somehow, somewhere is going to have to pay for that. And there's basically two groups of people. Either we're going to have to cut benefits to the people who receive it. One way to do that is this 3%. Or we're going to have to raise taxes on the state population. We had an election 2 years ago in which we had one candidate who ran by saying he was going to raise taxes, and we had another candidate who ran by saying he was going to make cuts. And the candidate who was going to make cuts won overwhelmingly. So it's not surprising that that's what Governor Bevin has proposed.
Additional revenue or changing revenue streams is off the table. So this is what we end up with.
That's right. And he has consistently stated that he's not going to raise taxes in order to pay for this. And so what we're going to end up with are these kind of cuts.
All right. You had said it doesn't go far enough. Explain that.
Well, I think when you start looking at the numbers and, you know, all of these things are still at some level kind of guesswork. But when you start looking at the numbers, it still doesn't look like it's quite enough to balance this. I think we're still seeing a lot of the analysis, and we really haven't had time to do completely in depth. So I hesitate to say for sure, but the preliminary results that I've looked at, and even things coming out of the Bevin administration, it doesn't look to me like they're quite covering it. We're getting maybe half to two thirds of the way there, which is great. I mean, I want to say, look, you know, this is a huge problem. There's no painless way to solve this. There is no painless way to solve this. The question is who's going to bear the brunt of the pain. And this is the course of action that the governor has chosen. And it goes a fair amount of the way. I think we're still going to need some additional work in order to get us all the way.
The fact that the governor, his background is in pensions and retirement savings and all of that, does it surprise you that this is the route that he's decided to go?
No. I mean, I think it doesn't It doesn't surprise me that this is the route that he's decided to go because, I mean, I think to be fair to Governor Bevin, he has been relatively consistent in saying this is the route I'm going to go all through his campaign and all through his first 2 years. I mean, whether we agree with that as the best way to go or not, I think it's unsurprising that this is the choice he's made.
How wise is it to do this first before they tackle tax reform?
That's a good question. We actually asked that question at a recent panel at the Kentucky Economic Association. And the overwhelming answer among three people who I highly respected as tax expert was that this was actually the right approach, is that we'll do the cuts here first. And I think, you know, as I said, I don't think it goes quite far enough. My suspicion is that with tax reform, we may see some of the rest of that filled in with changes in the tax structure.
And is it worth it reforming taxes if it is, quote unquote, revenue neutral?
Yes, it's always worth reforming taxes, even if it's revenue neutral. There's substantial inefficiencies in our tax structure in this state. My colleague Bill Hoyt, who's an expert in taxes and has done tremendous work in this, was one of the two economists on the previous governor's Blue Ribbon Tax Panel, and they laid out a plan that reduces those inefficiencies. And the important thing about understanding the reduction of these inefficiencies is that they allow us to collect more in revenue without distorting decisions that people make and without essentially hurting people as much as we do under the current system. And so I think it's important that we always look for those efficiencies. We want to collect the most amount of revenue with the least amount of distortion possible. And so there's tremendous efficiency gains that can be made here.
Back to the pension. Let's say assume that something does get passed. Talk about the immediate and long-lasting impacts of such a deal.
You know, anytime you have a big change like this, and it is going to be a big change, we're going to see changing structure in how people are paid. We're going to see changing structure in how people handle their retirement. The short-run effects are that you're going to see a lot of people change and make new decisions. I think what we will see, depending on the structure, and we've already begun to see it a little bit as these things have been threatened, is that people who are well along in the system and need to get out before the change takes place will retire earlier or leave earlier and pursue other careers.
Are you talking about maybe a mass exodus of teachers?
Well, I don't want to say mass exodus because I think there's that would be overstating the case. But I do think you're going to see teachers who are sort of maybe debating whether to stay that next year or not, or those next few years or not, saying, you know what, it's a good time to get out. I think, too, you're going to see we may see it that it becomes more and more difficult to attract teachers. I mean, essentially, in a way, this is a pay cut for teachers because we're going to take more money for them for the retirement, but we're actually not really promising substantially more in income at the end of the retirement. I mean, the amount they're going to get out of their pension stays about the same. Even with the 401k stuff on top, that requires you to stay beyond 27. And so consequently, in a sense, it is a pay cut for teachers. The question is who exactly is going to absorb that pay cut, right? I mean, we often imagine that that's static, that, well, teachers get paid X amount of dollars, and so if you take 3% more, they lose 3%. But what that also means is that, well, you find that you have fewer teachers available, and so school districts will begin to compete in pay and other benefits for those teachers. And so consequently, some of that's going to be borne by the school districts as well.
What about other state workers and their situation?
Well, I think we're going to see some of those people leaving as well. And I think there's a sense in which it may be harder to attract state workers, although I will point out that state government's been shrinking over the last 10 years or more. And so it's not clear to me how much that's going to impact things going forward. But I do think, you know, one of the things that just demographically we're seeing right now, and it's part of the reason that the pension plan's got a problem, is that the baby boomers are beginning to retire. And so even if you've shrunk government, even if you've shrunk that employment base, as those baby boomers retire, and they're more than just beginning, we're well into this, as those baby boomers retire, we're going to begin to see the need to hire more and more young people. But as the benefits of the state pension plan have been essentially reduced, or the cost of being in the state pension plan or the wages have been reduced, you're going to find it harder and harder to attract people into that. And so at the end of the day, we may end up having to figure out how to raise salaries of state workers in order to attract good people.
And encourage them to participate in
the pension plan, yeah.
Yeah, on their own in terms of what they determine is an acceptable level.
Right.
Okay, so we have this situation, and obviously you're getting quite a bit of pushback from teachers and
absolutely
state workers. And that was, in essence, inevitable.
That was, in essence, inevitable. I mean, well, you know, again, I come back to there's two ways to do this. We either cut the benefits, which essentially requiring teachers to pay more, requiring state workers to pay more into the pension, but getting the same level of benefit from the pension is essentially a cut in benefits. We either cut the benefits or we somehow raise taxes to pay for this, and clearly we've headed toward cutting the benefits. And so clearly what that's going to mean is that the people who were expecting that are going to be upset. And so it's not surprising that they are, and it's understandable, and they should you know, this is a democracy that we are in Kentucky. We have a government that is supposed to be responsive to people. And one of the interest groups in our state that many of us consider to be very important are teachers. And so it's not surprising that they're voicing this and that they're going to push back. And I think that to pretend that that's somehow either surprising or pretend that that's somehow not appropriate is well, kind of silly because, you know, welcome to the real world of politics, okay? I think on the flip side, nobody was going to be happy with whatever, solution we proposed. There were always going to be people who were going to be unhappy because there's no easy answer to this problem. While I might have made different choices than Governor Bevin, I have to respect the fact that he has made some choices and that he has put together a plan that gets us partway there. Whether he can get that plan through the state legislature and get it signed, and there are aspects of that plan that a number of people are questioning as to whether they're legal and whether those will withstand the court challenges, I don't know. I'm an economist, not a politician, and I'm not going to predict that. But I do think that no matter what he did, he was going to have a fight on his hands because somebody was going to be unhappy no matter what.
Well, Chris, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome. It's great to be here, Alan.
Our guest today on the business side has been Chris Bollinger, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research in the UK Gatton School of Business. We'll have our entire conversation at our website at wuky.org. Have a great week ahead.